Blog Talk Radio.
Find yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author Pat Foreman. Today is Tuesday, September 28th, and I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. For you early birds, today's secret password is tractor. Today's secret password is tractor. For you early birds in there, at the end of the show today, we'll have a contest. If you know the early bird password, you'll get a free Chicken Whisperer t-shirt and wristband. So don't tell anybody in the chat room now. It's your secret for getting here early. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guests when we have them on. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button at our homepage there at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about backyard poultry, show poultry, and sustainable living. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list all while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is now time to bring on my lovely and wonderful, awesome, educational, author, poultry advocate, the lovely Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat, how you doing today?
Oh, okay. What do you want? What do you want? I don't pay you to say those nice things.
you actually already got it for me. See, what happened was Jen and I went to go look at that tractor we were talking about on air yesterday. It was such a great deal. I mean, like I said, deals come and go, but I was telling her what made this deal such a great deal was that it's a 1953 anniversary edition Ford Jubilee. It's only had two owners, both locally here within about 10 miles of where we live right now. The first owner bought it new in 1953 and then owned it until 1999. And then the current owners, which we know, she was actually one of the co-organizers of the Atlanta Backyard Poultry Meetup Group for a while, and she owned it since 1999. And so so it was just – that made it a great deal. Then they were selling the tractor. They had all these implements to go with it, and they obviously couldn't use the implements without the tractor. So it was – I mean, those were really almost just thrown in as a freebie. So what I did was I went ahead and we got the tractor. I went ahead and gave them your address to send the invoice mainly because I deserve it. I just deserve
right.
it. You know what I'm saying? I didn't work for
you.
It.
Yeah. Just for being you, you don't have to compete. You don't have to, just for being you, you deserve this tractor. Absolutely. Sure, they can send the invoice here. I'll hold on to it for you.
You know, it just, I didn't work for it. I didn't earn it. I didn't, you know, I think I deserve it. You know, so
absolutely.
I just,
I'm sending
the bill to you.
Yeah, that's fine. It'll sit here for a while. When you're ready for it, just let me know. But yeah, I'll be glad to hold on to it for you. No problem. You whisper anything.
I love it. Dragon Eggs in the chat room saying I'm an impulse buyer, and that's definitely, I'm totally the opposite, believe it or not. I will analyze things for hours and hours and hours and days and days and days before I do anything because of my OCD. It's like the last thing I want to do is 2 days from now or 2 years from now think, oh, I didn't get a good deal, or oh, I should have not bought that, or oh, I should have. I've been down that road. So it's like OCD takes in, and I research, and I research, and I research. And actually, Jen and I have been looking for one for about 3 years since we got the good deal on the farmhouse down there. So about 3 years. So I had been looking pretty much off and on for 3 years, and so it wasn't just spur of the moment. The deal was spur of the moment. But the fact that what made it a special deal was the only reason why we got it. If it was just any other deal we saw on Craigslist or something like that, then we wouldn't have even jumped on it, because it had all at least two variables that made it actually a good deal. That's the only reason why we jumped on it. And after shopping for 3 years, I think that's adequate, shopping 3 years for a tractor and then finally getting one.
Well, you know, one of my old mentors, one of my very first mentors when I was working with the government, John Jennings, he was the associate director for health affairs, associate commissioner for health affairs at FDA, and he would say, if you want to do something, any reason is good enough, and any excuse is good enough. So if you really want to do something, just do it. You don't need excuses. But it is a good deal. You're going to find that once you get your farming going, you wonder how you could ever get along without it. It's just infinitely useful to move things around and to, I mean, it's endless, putting up fences, carrying this from here to there. I love my tractor. And every time I think about selling it, I get this weird feeling in my stomach. It's like, oh, my God, there goes my right hand if I really want to, you know, maintain the little homestead that I have here. So it's, it's almost as useful as a man.
And less problem and less problematic than a woman.
Yeah, it has been totally less, totally unproblematic. Except it doesn't cook. That's the only thing. It doesn't cook. Oh dear. Tractors are great. Hey, Whisper, I do have a confession. You want my confession? I'm going to confess it anyway, whether you want it or not. I have feasts. FEESE, which is female equipment excitement syndrome. I love tools and equipment and that sort of thing. It was sort of socially unacceptable when I was growing up because I was supposed to take home ec, but I really wanted to take shop. So now I do stuff with it anyway. So there, that's my confession. I love tractors and tools.
Yeah. The only thing I didn't have now, Pat, which I'm going to have to go shopping for now, is an attachment tiller. And I know you just love to hear that, but, you know, it's one of those.
Well, you'll need it in that hard pan and that hard red clay down there, you know, until you build raised beds. Raised beds are the way to go, I got to tell you. You don't believe me, but they're the way to go.
Down at the farm, it is so sandy. It's almost like farming on a beach down there in middle Georgia, middle south Georgia. That's why all the peach trees, all the peanuts, all the cotton, all that. I mean, we are just right there in the farming belt. And so, I mean, it's almost literally just sink your hands down in it, and then just the sandy loam just kind of falls through your fingers. It's pretty awesome, so we couldn't ask for anything better. But I tell you what I'm going to do, and I'm really tempted to do this, and those of you who know me very well know that I probably will do this. I would say it's probably about, well, the tractor was born and raised about 12 miles from here, if you think about the history of it. I'm thinking where we live right now. I'm thinking about actually trailering the implements back over here to the house, but I'm thinking about just driving the tractor down the main roads just to tick off the Johns Creek and Alpharetta residents one Friday afternoon when traffic is horrendous anyway. And so I'm thinking about doing, And so someone already on my Facebook says, you need to do it. And they're like, take a video of it. And all this kind of stuff.
You'll want to do is have a trailer car behind you with the blinking lights on. I tell you, I had a friend that was badly hurt. It was his brother, because he was just going along Route 11 without a accompanying car, and he got smashed in the back and broke his something or other, and it was awful. So
I hate it when
careful.
That happens. Breaking your something or another. That really hurts.
Yeah, it did. That's what they have a dairy farm, and he couldn't work for like 6 months. It was a serious, serious thing.
You know, tractor accidents, that's something we really ought to do on this radio show, because I know that the FFA is really involved in that. Yeah, and just you're exactly right. That reminds me, we probably need to have the experts on and have a and because there are a lot of listeners that live rural that have the tractors, and I think you make a good point. Maybe we need to get somebody on and talk about tractor safety. I think that would be a paramount idea and absolutely awesome. So, yep, I completely agree. I completely agree with that. So maybe I'll have Jen in the old 1983 Ford F-150 with the flashers on, with the sign in the back that says "Possum, the other white meat" in the back window, and have us just she can follow me down the road.
You do know how to make friends, especially in rush hour traffic.
Goodness.
There was a bumper sticker I saw up at the Energy Festival, Sustainable Renewable Energy Festival. It said, if you lived in your car, you'd be home by now.
True.
Oh, dear.
That's absolutely true.
Well, I have such respect for power equipment that it still intimidates me a little bit, which is why I've been really safe with it. But, yeah, let's do that. I think that's a great idea to have. In fact, we might even do it like a wood shop safety type of thing for the homeowner that's the do-it-yourselfer and making their chicken coops on their own, like with power saws and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Just a thought.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. I agree, because like I said, this radio show is so broad when it comes to everything that we try to bring on all of our guests in their expert field about anything. We've had it on the radio show, and so not just urban lifestyle, rural lifestyle. And it's absolutely perfect. So I think that's a great plan. All righty, let's see. We got here chickens in the news, and we do have several. I mean, I'm telling you what, the BlackBerry was just beeping at me all morning long because of all the chickens in the news related articles. And so we're just going to share with you a few of these. You can see them all. You can read them all in their entirety at our Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/chickenthechickenwhisperer. That's facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. And we have several here. The first one I put was, of course, joyous. Backyard chickens approved in Evanston. Backyard chickens have been approved in Evanston. Like we said, Pat and I, we follow this very closely, and our guesstimation is about 85% of the towns who approach allowing backyard poultry end up doing so. And it says residents may own 2 to 6 chickens under ordinance approved Monday. Let's see, this comes to us from, looks like CBS 2, Evanston, Illinois, CBS. Evanston is well known as the home of Northwestern University, the birthplace of Tinker Toys, and the site of a sledding hill known as Mount Trashmore. But now, Mount Trashmore, but now the near north suburb will also be the home of backyard chickens. Woohoo! The Evanston City Council approved an ordinance Monday night that will allow residents to own between 2 and 6 chickens. The keeping of chickens has been banned in Evanston, along with the keeping of hogs, horses, and some other animals since 1974. The motion was approved 6-3. Evanston Alderman Dolores Holmes, Judy Fisk, and Lionel Baptiste voted against the ordinance. Under the ordinance, homeowners must apply for permits and let their neighbors know in advance that they are raising chickens. So it doesn't say they have to get their permission. It just has to let them know. So it's a matter of knocking on the door and said, "Hey, I'm raising chickens, by the way. See ya." Under the ordinance, homeowners must apply for permits and let their neighbors know in advance that they're raising chickens. The hens cannot be a nuisance to the neighbors, like dogs, and on-site slaughter will not be permitted, government controlling our food source. The proposed ordinance would limit chicken coops to just 20 citywide in the first year. See what else? The city could revoke the license of a chicken owner who is cited a third time for a violation. A license form still must be drafted before people can actually buy live chickens for their backyards. I assume they can go ahead and buy dead chickens for their backyards, but it says a license must be drafted before people can actually buy live chickens for their backyard. And I say that because here in a city in Atlanta, somebody called animal control because somebody had concrete chickens in their front yard, and owners and neighbors, I swear, you remember me sharing that story, Pat? And so animal control came out and ticketed him. He came home, there was a ticket on his door for poultry, which was a violation, and then come to find out, they were concrete chickens in his front yard. So I guess it's related. You must have a permit before you actually buy live chickens and put them in your backyard. Members of Evanston Backyard Chicken Committee clucked with excitement after the vote. The group formed more than a year ago after a documentary about keeping hens, Mad City Chickens, drew an overflow crowd at the Evanston Public Library. So you can see the rest of the story, but that's great news regarding Evanston. That's in the Chicago area regarding backyard poultry. So congratulations, folks. Congratulations for all your hard work. And then we've got one here, which was, I thought, very, very interesting. And it's a commentary, but it's very good. It's called Raise Your Chickens, Earn Clucking Rights. And this is kind of a commentary about a 27-year veteran of the poultry industry. And he goes on to talk about, he's had a number of people ask him about his opinion on the Springfield's chicken debate, and he says he's quite torn. And he doesn't, like most things, add any factual information or studies to back up one comment, but he says, on one hand, backyard flocks are a potential harborage of avian diseases and pose a significant health risk to both humans and commercial flocks. But he doesn't, of course, back that up with any proof or any studies or anything like that. It's maybe just his opinion. And I don't know if he's basing his opinion on ever having six backyard chickens or if he's basing the opinion on having 600,000 chickens at his commercial poultry industry when he worked there. So I don't know if this gentleman or young lady has even researched that based on six chickens in your backyard is a harborage of avian diseases and poses significant health risk versus having 600,000. That may just be his opinion based on his experience working 27 years in the industry. But on the other hand, he believes that a big reason why the food industry has become so vilified is because they have created a huge distance between people and the source of their food. So it sounds like he gets it. And so he said at the very end, he said, yes, I think people need chickens. So it sounds like he probably is slanting towards allowing backyard poultry. But at the same time, he has all these reservations from what he saw on the commercial poultry farms, which we know that's night and day, left and right, up and down, black and white compared to, six hens in your backyard and the commercial poultry houses. But nonetheless, it's a good article. You can read that at our Facebook page, facebook.com/ the Chicken Whisperer. That's a good one. And then there's finally just one more I'm going to share with you. And, again, you can read all of this. This comes to us from, I believe, Omaha. And Feathers Fly Over Chickens by Whitney Eaton from the World Herald News Service. And proponents and opponents of backyard chicken farming argued before the Bellevue City Council Monday night over rules that would govern the raising of feathery friends inside city limits. City Council held a public hearing on an ordinance that would permit backyard farming in areas zoned residential, which are single-family homes, on at least one-acre lots. Chickens are now permitted only on land zoned agricultural. Of the 15 residents who spoke at the hearing, nearly three-quarters favored allowing chickens within city limits, but opposed the proposed ordinance because of the restrictions that accompanied it. The city is proposing to limit the number and type of chickens that can be kept and dictate the size and location of their living quarters. So, again, it's here again in Omaha there. You just never know. It's what's going to happen there. We hope that they'll join one of the 85% of the towns that do allow backyard poultry. We think if they use common sense, that common sense will prevail. If they look at the factual information about backyard poultry versus commercial poultry, we also think that common sense will prevail, and that's what we have to hope for. But again, folks, you can get all of our Chickens in the News segments there. Chickens in the News every day is sponsored by MeyerHatchery.com and Meyer Hatchery up in Polk, Ohio, and we'll be broadcasting live from there on Friday, November 12th, the day before the big Ohio National Poultry Show, largest in the country. So we'll be there at Meyer Hatchery broadcasting live there on Friday. They're going to have lots of great things planned there, so come on by and say hello. And I know that, Pat, you have a Chickens in the News segment as well.
Yes, I do. This one is a continuation of a story we've been tracking, and, of course, with my animal science and genetics and nutrition background, one that I find fascinating. This is from the Utah News, and it's under fire. The health department pulls back on its arsenic report. It's by Judy Fahs, F-A-F-A-H-Y-S, and it was in the Salt Lake Tribune. And this is just really interesting.
I want to interrupt you right here. Listen to this. This is probably – does this deal with the arsenic and the studies and
yes.
that happened out in Salt Lake with the kids? Okay. I want to make people listen to this very carefully because we had the PhD, the doctor, the epidemiologist, toxicologist on the radio show back in July. We asked her the tough questions about this particular study, about the arsenic in the food and the kids and how many eggs they ate. We asked all those questions. You can listen to the archive about this original story back in July where we had the young lady, the PhD on, telling us who ran the study about this. So I'm definitely anxious in hearing this. I didn't see it come across the wire. So go ahead, Pat. Very interesting.
Well, it is so interesting. And, of course, keep in mind there's only one company approved by the FDA to make Roxurstone, which is the arsenic-containing feed additive. There's only one company approved to make arsenic-containing feed additive. So, anyway, here we go. It's the maker of a chicken feed additive is complaining that a state study harmed its good name and its product has suffered consequences. This has prompted the Utah Health Department to partly retract its findings. But even after agreeing that references to the additive Roxurstone, and it's spelled Roxarsone, does not belong in its May report, the Health Department stands by its conclusions that its lab finding found worrisome and troublesome levels of arsenic in the poultry feed of a Mapleton family that used it for its backyard chickens. And the eggs from those chickens laid and the two kids who ate them had high levels of arsenic. The state epidemiologist, Robert Rolfe, said that the study should not have been linked to Roxurstone, the only feed additive that's approved to add arsenic into chicken feed, which is added to so they're putting arsenic in the chicken feed to reduce disease and increase pinkness in the poultry used for meat. So to get your poultry meat pink, we have to add arsenic? That's a real question in my book. Okay, so the high arsenic levels in the Mapleton family's chicken feed was referred to this one product. Since the agency did not test specifically for that chemical tying Roxurstone and the Mapleton feed, quote, went beyond the evidence we had, unquote. Anyway. Still, Rolf said, this limited study served as a valuable purpose in answering a question for the worried Mapleton mom whose young children tested high for arsenic. And arsenic is a naturally occurring mineral, of course, but in excessive amounts can cause all kinds of problems, including cancer. We did find arsenic in the feed, Rolf said, and we did find arsenic in the eggs. We did find arsenic in the children, and the arsenic went down when they started using a different kind of feed. So news about the leak kept the backyard chicken community, which is us, of course, talking about it for weeks, and we're talking about it for months now. This happened today. And at the forefront of the national trend, many backyard hen keepers go to the trouble of raising chickens to have better control over what their family eats. And the arsenic report, in some cases, has undermined that sense of control. I mean, it's bugged me. I think now when I buy pellets at the feed store, which I always keep available, I feed them organic feed in troughs outside, but I always want them to have available feed 24 hours inside. It's inside the coop. I went, well, is there arsenic in these pellets? So yeah, I've been affected by it. The Intermountain Farmers Association, or IFA, said it does not add Roxurstone to any of its feed and suggested that the Mapleton feed, which reportedly came from one of its stores, reflected only background levels of arsenic. I mean, if background levels of arsenic are that high to come through to the eggs and to the kids, now we've got to worry about background levels of arsenic. The IFA, or the Intermountain Farmers Association, called for a retraction of the Health Department study last month. And the association's vice president for agriculture operations did not respond to calls seeking for comment on this article. Meanwhile, it gets a little thicker. Douglas Beher, B-E-H-R, an attorney for Alpha Pharma, LLC, which he describes as the only company approved by FDA administration to sell Roxurstone in medicated animal feed, as we talked about before, has sent the Health Department two letters defending the study's complete retraction, demanding the study's complete retraction. The letters were obtained through open records request, and note that the Health Department lab never used the proper test to detect Roxurstone. They were only looking at arsenic, apparently. I mean, really. They also cited there are a slew of what the bear describes as erogenous, I can't even pronounce it, scientific errors, bad scientific errors. So they're saying that they didn't do the study right. It was an incomplete study, which is always claimed if a company doesn't like the results of a study. The attorney also blames, Whisper, you're going to love this one. The attorney also blames the concerned citizen, presumably now this is the Mapleton mom, whose request for help from the health department prompted the study for, quote, violating FDA regulations by using medicated feeds in ways for which it is not approved. So now the company's lawyer is saying, okay, mom, you used this feed that you gave to your chickens in ways that's not approved by FDA. I mean, what's a mom to do? What are any of us to do? This is really outrageous. As we have clearly demonstrated, Boer's letter says, the study unfairly and falsely defames my client's product and must be withdrawn immediately and have a clarification issued. Failure to take these actions may force us to proceed with other measures to protect our client's reputation, to keep putting arsenic into our environment so all our kids get sick and our hens have arsenic in their eggs. I mean, you've got to just sort of chuckle over this thing, don't you? Oh, God. So anyway, the lawyer declined to comment Friday on these letters and all this when this article came out. So anyway, the health department, what it's going to do, it's under fire, right? So it announced July 29th that it was going to withdraw the report because of the references to Roxurson. But in addition, the federal agency that funded the study, which is the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, has removed the study from its website pending further review. And we're just about done here, folks, but here's the last kicker. Although the study may have left many backyard hen keepers anxious, it has also sparked a lively discussion about poultry feed. What many would like to see is more study. I would like to see more study, and I'd like to see them impartially done. And that includes the Utah Department of Health, where Rolfs noted that the Mapleton feed study never was intended to be a comprehensive study. The agency simply is trying to answer the questions of a Mapleton mother who was, quote, freaked out, which I would be too, by the high arsenic levels a doctor had detected in their children's urines. The high arsenic levels that a doctor found in their children's urines. Okay, so all it is, it needs more study and something he hopes that they will get more funding for. And I got to tell you, Whisper, if I had a couple million dollars, I would certainly start funding more arsenic studies if I could. So that's the latest about the arsenic report and the Utah news. Isn't that amazing?
That really is. Thank you so much. If you would, if it lists in that article the company or that the lawyer is representing that says that study and the article gave arsenic a bad name or Roxazone a bad name, let's try to contact them and have them on the show. And
what we'll do is
we'll post the interview on our Facebook page back from July so people can listen to it. We'll try to go back and search the study and post the studies before we have them on, and then we'll actually have them on. And if they would like to be up to the challenge to come on, and if they want to try to clear their name, then they can do it on this radio show. But we can also ask them the tough questions about why they think it's appropriate to put arsenic in our feed, and basically my understanding from talking to several PhDs on the issue was that arsenic basically works almost like an antibiotic. It does kill some bacteria, and it promotes bigger growth faster in a lot of these broilers. Now, my understanding also, it is federal law that you cannot use this arsenic, the Roxurson feed in laying hens, commercial laying hens. It can only be used in the broiler population. Doesn't make it right, but just to clarify that from my understanding. And so let's if we can hunt them down, Pat, and have them come on the show, tell them that we actually had the scientist on the show that conducted the test. We had her live. We can send them a link to the show so they can listen to it and then see if they'd like to come on and give us their opinion in the matter. But I think even in the original study, if my memory serves right, it says that the test specifically didn't test for Roxurson. That's just a common additive in poultry feed, whether, you know, and so it did, I think it even mentioned that in the initial study that we did not specifically test. I even think the doctor on our show when she came on live said they didn't specifically test for that, but that is one cause or one additive in poultry feed, at least in commercial broiler feed, that is arsenic, I think, based. So that I think that'll be great. I think we ought to try to reach out to them and see if they'll come on the show. Based on we followed this so closely for so long, and even had the young lady who ran the test come on the show, that maybe they would be interested in coming on and explaining everything to us.
Yeah. Do you have a copy of the original report, Whisper? I don't, and I would like to have a copy since they've taken
the
it off
original,
their website.
The original study from way back then?
Yeah.
That came
yeah.
out in the paper. We can probably Google it and find it, I think. So it should
well,
be.
Well, it's been taken off the website. Maybe not, but I just Googled it and didn't come up with it.
I don't know if they'd have a – I mean, it got national attention. I mean, I'm sure that we'll probably be able to find it. I mean, all the little news agencies, all the newspapers that ran the story, surely they haven't had time to go and take them all down. We'll find it. So
yeah, the stories are there. I was thinking about the original studies and the reports, how they – what they did and what they did and what additive they – or, you know – what their analysis was. I want the details. I'm into details.
I don't know if that
really
was ever printed,
what they did.
But we'll definitely try to do that. Let's try to get them on the radio show. That'll be awesome. So, hey, folks, we're going to take a commercial break. We are in for a treat today. Not only do we have Christine Heinrich, a historian with the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities, but we also have Mike Gilbert here, and he's going to be also talking about getting the Chanticleer, a recognized APA breed, and into the standard of perfection. So, and we're also going to be talking about tips, tricks, and traps of long-distance transportation of birds to shows. And so get your pen out, get your paper out. We're going to come back after the break. We're going to welcome Mike, and we're going to welcome Christine, and we're going to have a great radio show, and we're going to learn all about some of these ticks and tricks. Say that 10 times. Tricks and tips about transporting birds to shows, and also about what we need to do to get the Chanticleer recognized as an APA breed and into the standard of perfection. So, folks, don't go anywhere. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We'll be back right after this short break.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supplies' Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com. When you need an incubator, think Brinsey, the incubation specialists. Brinsey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. They have incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. These durable, easy-to-clean, quality products come with a 2-year warranty and are the choice of backyard breeders through research establishments. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled Brinsea. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. And don't miss out on Brinsea's September sale. Until the end of the month, you can save 20% or more on their full range of incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea. Technology you can trust. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Designed for starting and growing game birds, turkeys, ducks, geese, and broilers, Manipro's Game Bird Showbird Crumbles feature 24% protein and a combination of vitamins, minerals, and yeast culture. This complete feed does it all, from growth and weight gain to healthy development and even improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try Manipro's Game Bird Showbird formula and see the difference.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com.
In reality, I am Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We got a great show lined up for you today. Again, Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities historian Christine Heinrich is with us, and of course Mike Gilbert, and we're going to mainly be talking about tips, tricks, and traps of long-distance transportation of birds to shows, and of course also what we can do to get the Chanticleer recognized in the standard of perfection. So let me go ahead, get over here to the switchboard, and we'll actually bring Mike and Christine on live. And Pat, you're back live too. So welcome, Christine. Welcome, welcome, Mike.
Thanks, Andy. It's good to be here.
Yeah.
You know,
hey,
I wanted
Christine,
to mention.
Christine, I'm so glad you're here. You didn't have to do jury duty today, huh?
No, I didn't. I'm probably one of the few people who would have enjoyed it, too. I was going to write about it, but I wasn't. I'm just called on standby, so I have to check in every night this week and see if they need me. So we'll see what happens, but I'm able to be here today. I wanted to mention that Judy Fays, who the reporter at the Salt Lake Tribune who wrote that story, is a good friend of mine, and we've been talking about this story as it goes along. And if you, I can certainly put you in touch with her directly. She's a very nice person. She's very interested in this story. And, you know, I think you've picked out the essence of this story is that we don't know where this arsenic's coming from. And, you know, I think it is interesting that the industry is overreacting so dramatically about this with threats of lawsuits and all this. These are subjects about which the public should be informed. We should know what's in our food and how it's getting into it.
Absolutely. You know what's got me wondering about, Christine, is maybe it's not directly Roxurson, but we know now that the chicken litter, when it passes almost completely through the chicken, and we know that chicken litter, when it's spread on the fields, because we've had reports of leaching of arsenic into the streams and rivers and probably aquifers, so maybe, just maybe, it's because the crops now that are grown on these chicken litter fertilized fields are picking up the arsenic as a third transfer. I mean, first we give it to the chickens, then the chickens poop it out and it goes to the fields, and then the crops that are grown on the fields pick it up, and so it's recycled back to the feed, and they don't really know.
Absolutely, Pat. You're absolutely right. Arsenic is an element. It's a heavy metal. It doesn't break down. And I'm sure that it can be traced if we have the will and the interest to do so. And now that this has emerged as an issue, I certainly hope that this is something that gets some more attention.
Well, it has to. I mean, it absolutely has to get more attention if we're poisoning our streams. And so maybe this wasn't a direct rocks or stone contamination. Maybe it's an indirect. But even so, it can. I would guess it can trace back to the poultry litter and the feed additives at the commercial level. But we'll see.
Well, that sure
seems
likely.
Really, yeah. I really want to track along. So all that is to say, then, I mean, my God, that puts every single bag at suspect. You know, when you buy bagged feed, or even bulk, it puts all the feed at suspect. So
that's
maybe we'll
right.
have a home
that's
test
right.
for arsenic.
Right, and that's not only chicken feed, but as you say, if it's on the field, it raises questions about what's in other crops.
Right.
Where is
dog
this really
food,
going?
Cat feed, people feed.
Exactly.
All feed.
So
it could be big.
So anyway, I'll put you in touch with Judy.
Yeah, great. I'd love to talk with Judy. So that'd be wonderful. Yeah, we're going to bulldog this one. I mean, this is when something like this, I turn into a real little persistent bulldog. But anyway, let's talk with Mike. Mike, welcome to the show here today.
Well, thanks for inviting me on. I appreciate being with you today.
Oh my goodness, Mike, you've got so much vast experience, and you've been doing chickens. You're a true national expert and treasure, I think. So we really appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your insights.
I don't consider myself an expert at anything. My favorite definition of expert is somebody from out of town who wears a tie.
Okay,
so.
Well, okay, you don't wear a tie, I don't think, but you do qualify as an expert.
That's right.
Yeah. So, Christine, you want to take it away?
Sure. Showing chickens is just an excellent way to get in touch with other breeders. It's an excellent way, if you haven't had chickens yet but you think you might like to, of meeting people. Once you have chickens, it's just a great way to just enjoy them in a different arena. And I can speak from personal experience that there's nothing so exciting as getting a ribbon for one of your chickens, that one you love and you've specially taken care of. To have that recognized feels really special. I have a show page on my site, and I try to keep track of all the shows that I can. If anyone has any shows, please send them to me through the site, and I'm happy to put them up there. We have two shows coming up here in California in October, the Central Coast Feather Fancier Show, October 9th and 10th. And I'm going to be bringing my own new birds to that, my two Dorkings and my two Icelandics. And then there'll be the Seaside Bash at the Beach coming up in Ventura on the 23rd and 24th.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to be a busy woman.
Oh, it's a busy month, yeah. Actually, in the middle of the month, I'm going to be going to Montana, where I'll probably see Judy for the Society of Environmental Journalists Conference. That's where I initially met her. We were roommates there one year. And it's going to be in Missoula, Montana this year, and will be followed by a 3-day tour of Glacier National Park.
Ooh.
So it's a great place. I hope they'll have my books there, and it's a place for me to connect with other reporters and editors and tell them about some of the issues of poultry, what's going on, and how to get in touch with people for poultry stories. So a lot of people, you know, once they realize they need to do a story about poultry, they say, well, who can I go to? I don't know anything about this. And so that's a way that I can make some of the poultry people that I know available to them.
Nice. Very nice. Okay. So all this is to say, Mike, you transport birds to shows all across the U.S. In fact, I first met you at the Ohio National last year, and I know you drove it in from the West. Can you tell us some of the ways to safely and even healthfully transport these birds long distances?
Well, sure. Most of it is common sense, but there's safety issues. There's in some cases, there might be legal issues. And, of course, you're always concerned about the comfort and well-being of your birds because a show is, when it gets down to it, to win the top awards, it becomes sort of a beauty contest. The bird has to be clean and without broken feathers and in good condition and shows well, which means they act not afraid but tame and just shows the type to the maximum potential. So, with that in mind, the container you use is important, because if you're using something with, say, 2x4 welded wire or chicken wire or something like that, there's a good potential that bird, depending on the variety and the type, could catch tail or wing feathers in those cages and break their feathers. And that's going to pretty much ruin them for showing until they grow new feathers, which takes a lot of time. The other thing is the safety of the bird. You have to take into consideration the weather and the temperature and so forth, and make sure that whatever you're using for transportation, whether it's a pull-behind trailer, the back of a covered pickup, or whatever, you know, is well ventilated. I've heard of situations where people have gone off to a show loading birds in boxes and putting them in their trunk. Too many birds, hot weather, and the birds can suffocate. It's happened, you know.
Yeah.
So ventilation is important.
And how do you stack your birds, or how do you make sure they have enough ventilation?
Well, unless we're taking, I've got two modes, and one is I have a covered trailer, which has, ventilation built into the top where I can open the ventilator and let fresh air flow through as I'm driving down the road. But if I'm not taking a lot of birds, you know, we use the back of an SUV. And what I like for that is new, clean, just plain cardboard boxes. That's not very fancy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always concerned about biosecurity. And cardboard boxes, comfortable, make sure there's holes cut in the sides and filled with 2-3 inches of dry pine shavings. That'll help keep the bird clean and comfortable. And,
2 to 3 inches of pine shavings, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That'll help absorb the feces and help the bird stay clean. You don't want, especially on a white bird or a light-colored bird, the bird to get stained by manure, you know, on the way to a show, because it's pretty difficult to remove. Safety is and security and comfort. If you've got boxes and containers in the back of a pickup, make sure they're not sliding around. If you're pulling a trailer, make sure, you know, again, this is just common sense, make sure the lights are working, the connection is hooked up properly, and you've got your directional and brake lights working. Because the last thing you want is to, you know, have some kind of an accident on the way to the show. The other thing is you kind of need to know state requirements depending on where you're going. Different states have different rules. Usually, you need to take along or send in advance even to the show secretary a copy of your Pelorum typhoid testing certificate, or be a certified member of NPIP, National Poultry Improvement Plan. And some states will require an interstate veterinary health certificate. You need to check with the show secretary where you're going and find out exactly what the requirements are. Common sense, make sure you're not transporting any birds that have recently been exposed to any type of poultry diseases. You have to be sure you're not in a situation where you might be spreading some disease to some other people's birds.
That
just goes without saying.
Yeah. So Mike, if you have one of your birds is a little sniffly or something, do you disqualify then from going to the show? Or do you treat it en route?
No. If my bird was showing any type of contagious disease whatsoever, and if it were before the show, before I left, of course I wouldn't even take it. But if that – and things can come out because of stress. and traveling and down the road and maybe different environment, different situation the bird's used to, it can bring out stress. Stress can bring out symptoms of diseases that they might be harboring.
Right.
So if a bird would develop that en route, I wouldn't take it into the show at all. You know,
so you just leave it in the trailer?
Yeah, and again, make sure it's comfortable and has feed and water and so forth. There's not much else you can do.
Yeah, okay.
You could take an arsenal of medications with you, but a lot of poultry diseases have similar symptoms, and without a good diagnosis, sometimes it's difficult to know how to treat and what to treat with.
Yeah. Wow. And then what do you do if you have to stop overnight? I mean, you drive long distances. Is there to make sure they got enough ventilation or don't get too chilled or too hot? Do you have any tricks on that?
Usually with my birds, the Chanticleers and the Americanas, too chilled is not a problem. They can take any amount of cold you can throw at them. They're very hardy. Heat is another story. Make sure they don't get overheated. If I'm stopping overnight, I've got special cages I can put them in and give them a little feed and a little scratch grain.
But when you say special cages, they're additional to, they're different from what you're transporting them in?
Right. It's going to be
so
hard to feed and water a bird in a cardboard box. Some of these other containers that are designed for transporting birds. So I've got other cages I can put them in to give them a little feed and water and then move them back to the box.
Okay. Okay. And then what kind of do you have a van that you drive or pull a trailer?
Yeah, I've got an SUV, and if I'm not taking too many, the birds will be in these boxes in the back of the SUV. The seats fold out and works out pretty well. I can transport up to 15 or 20 birds pretty easily that way, and still have room enough for my luggage and everything else I need to take along, feed, water, and supplies.
Okay.
But if I'm going to a major show, taking 30 or more birds, I do have a covered trailer. It's like 6x8, I believe, something in that order. 5x8, I'm sorry. I just make sure that everything is secure, so the boxes or the containers are not sliding around, and the birds aren't getting banged around from the shock of braking and starting and potholes in the road and what have you.
Yeah, really. Do you have a rule of thumb about how long you'll go without giving your birds water? I mean, 8 hours or one, I don't know, and scratch preferably. But.
You know, again, if it's warm, they need water more often. If it's cool, less frequently. But if they get water and feed once or twice a day, ideally, because you don't want to overfeed them. They're making too, and especially if you're feeding some type of mash, I prefer a scratch grain for traveling because it takes more time to get through their system. But
so you generally just use a scratch when you're traveling? Kind of sticks to their ribs longer, huh?
Right.
Well, that's good. That's a good tip. Okay. Great. Well, that's really useful. You know, when I was at the national show, Mike, I saw some chicken transport. Next time I do it, I'm there. I'm going to take pictures because some of them had these. Birds were literally in cages, kind of hanging off the back of these trailers, and they must have been. I didn't see them covered, but maybe they did cover them before they headed out. But there were just and others I saw were packed into some vans so tightly. You go, oh my God, how can they ever make it? But that's kind of why I thought maybe we could get your advice about safe ways to transport them. So.
Well, I like to make sure each bird has got a separate container, so they're not again, under stress or a new environment, they could decide to get aggressive with one another, start a fight or pick one another, and they're blooding one another's combs or picking feathers off, or even picking out muffs and beard feathers in case of the Americanas and some other breeds. That's not good. So I just make sure each bird has its own container and adequate space, adequate shavings under them for cushion and for absorption of the moisture that might be passing through them.
Yeah, and about what size are your containers again? You said they're boxes, and they're, say, for a standard bird, say for a
just large enough so the bird can stand up or sit down and move around slightly. You don't want them to have a lot of room. They don't need a lot of room as long as they're getting adequate airflow and so forth. The object is to get them there safely and in good condition.
Yeah, okay,
so it depends
great.
On the size of the bird. Bantam, I have little covered cheese boxes that are great for bantams. They're rounded in the corners. There's no place for them to back into a corner and break feathers.
On the other hand, I've got cheese box, Mike. Is that what you said you have?
Yeah. These are
cheese box.
We've got a lot of cheese factories here in Wisconsin, so I'm able to come up with a supply of these from time to time.
Cool.
It's a type of box that cheese is packed in for shipping.
And it's round.
So that's pretty unique.
That is unique. That's pretty good. Okay. So it does make sense the rounded corners might be maybe make it a little easier on the transport if there's a bumpy trip. Okay. Interesting. Anything else?
No, it's mostly common sense and talking with others and taking into consideration how far you're traveling and how many you're taking, and act accordingly.
Okay, very good. Christine, do you have any questions about transport before we go on to the Chanticleers?
Well, I was going to ask Mike if he knows of any books he'd recommend on showing generally. The best book that I know of is actually an English book called Exhibition Poultry Keeping by David Scrivener. And it's an excellent book. I recommend it. So much of the advice, is general and doesn't matter which country you're in. That's the best one I know. But I was wondering if there is a good book by an American.
Well, I don't have an extensive library, but I do subscribe to Poultry Press, and that is the exhibition fanciers monthly newspaper that almost everyone who shows subscribes to it. It's got news about all the shows and so forth, results of shows. And not to give a big plug for Poultry Press, but it's been around for many, many years and seems to be the standard.
Christine, do you have the title of that book, the English book
yes.
that you referenced?
It's called Exhibition Poultry Keeping. I've put a picture of the cover on my blog this morning. And David Scrivener, who is a longtime poultry judge in England, has written it. It's got a lot of wonderful photographs in it and drawings, which as far as showing birds to get that detail, it's really important to have a picture as well as a verbal description. So I can recommend this book very highly. I think certainly if you're going to be showing birds, it's worth having. There's just a lot of tips in it. He's just got one page on transporting poultry, but, it has basically the points that you covered, Mike. And, it is common sense, and it is caring for your birds. Those are really the things that should guide you.
And the other thing is gaining experience over time. Go to shows, talk to successful exhibitors, find out what they do. Ask for tips. Most poultry people at shows are the friendliest group of people you're ever going to meet anywhere,
mm-hmm.
and they're more than willing to share their knowledge.
Yep, it's
so
true. And you tend to see them year after year after year.
Oh, it gets to be like a family reunion.
Yeah.
I've made good friends from coast to coast, and, like after 30, 35 years, I can travel almost any part of the country and and find friends to visit with, stay with. So it's really a great hobby.
Yeah, great hobby, and for some are profession, although I understand it's kind of hard to make money at chickens when you're even being a professional judge. But it certainly is fun.
Yeah, if you're out to make money, find another hobby or business.
Yeah,
not
or
that
write
it can't
about
be
it.
Done, but most people like a little variety, and you almost have to specialize in a popular breed of variety and become well known for that, and then your birds can command pretty decent prices once you've built up a record over time.
Great. Okay. Any questions? I don't see any questions in the chat room. So, Christine, unless you've got some more comments, well, we can move on to the Chanticleers and getting them approved by the American Poultry Association.
Yeah, well,
okay.
The American Poultry Association. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
American Poultry Association has outlined very specific rules and their bylaws, and the bylaws can be found, you know, by requesting them from the secretary, or they're actually published in the annual yearbook. I've got the 2009 yearbook in front of me, and the rules for admitting new breeds, varieties, and even species are contained in Article 6, Section 2 and 3 of the bylaws. So it's about a six-step process. I don't know how much time we have left. How much of this do you want me to go through?
Well, we've got easily about 15 minutes, 13 to 15 minutes.
Okay,
so,
well, I'll
we can go into this.
It is a
really interesting process, because you've got to respect any breed that's in there that has gone through this process is well-deserved.
Yeah, and there's some breeds and varieties going through the process as we speak, you know, this year. So it is currently relevant. But anyway, the first thing that happens, and it usually helps to have a club to support any type of endeavor like this, because one person alone isn't going to get it done. It takes a group of people to gain admission of a new breed or variety of chicken or any other type of poultry. So the first thing that happens is a petition is sent by the requesting party to the Secretary of the American Poultry Association. In that petition, they want to see the history of the origin of this breed or variety, something about its breeding background, any special facts of an educational nature, proposed name of the breed or variety, and they also want you to write up a standard for it in the general format and style as for existing breeds and varieties. And the standard will cover all points of the shape of the bird, the color or colors, and the weights. And it also, along with this written standard, they want you to assign the copyright rights to the American Poultry Association.
Huh. Okay. That makes
so
sense,
So not just
so
anybody can
book.
Go out and copy this and publish it. Because the APA does make money off from selling standards. And so they want to retain those rights. And they have a right to.
Sure.
If in this written standard you're providing, if you're talking about or petitioning for some type of bantam that is already recognized by the other organization, which is the American Bantam Association, and if that breed of variety is already in the or been accepted by the American Bantam Association, then you have to make sure there's no conflicts, because we have a situation right now where the ABA and the APA have recognized certain breeds and varieties that were the standard conflicts, and that presents a problem when it comes to judging.
Ooh.
Do you use the ABA standard or use the APA standard? And we're talking about primarily fine details, but we won't spend a lot of time on that, just to let people know that it's something that's there. And it is a sore point. So that's the first step.
Is there a hierarchy there, Mike, if there's two conflicting standards from the from the stand, from the bantams to the APA to ABA, I would think, darn, that is a conflict. How do they resolve that?
Well, both organizations have standard committees that try to work with one another to get these things ironed out. But you have a group of fanciers that adheres to one standard and another group that adheres to a different standard, and so you've got that conflict, and you have to try to please all parties. And sometimes that just becomes impossible, and so things remain the status quo for a period of time until people either change their mind or are willing to concede.
Well, can you give us an example of what might be a controversy? Would it be like body type or feather patterns? For example,
in the Araucana breed, each standard recognizes different color varieties.
Oh,
so what
my.
Is accepted by one organization isn't accepted by the other organization. A few of the varieties are the same, but there are some differences. Generally speaking, the ABA is a little easier, I'll say, or it has been in the past, to get new varieties in, so they have a lot of bantams out there that have more varieties recognized than what the APA has been willing to recognize.
Why
so
do you think
probably
that is?
Have...
Yeah, go ahead.
So I don't know how much you want to get into that, but it's just to let people know that it's out there. And so if you're showing bantams, you might want to consider owning both standards and then know if you're showing at an ABA sanctioned meet or an APA sanctioned meet, and each organization also licenses their own judges.
Okay, I didn't know that either.
Yep,
so
yep.
That makes sense, I guess. So.
Yeah, but they're
wow.
both good to work with. It's just that you've got fanciers who have different ideas about the way things should be, and very difficult to please everybody at the same time.
Yeah. Wow. No kidding.
Okay, so that's just the first step, this petition with the standard and the copyright assignment. That's step one. That's sent to the Secretary of the American Poultry Association. We're talking about the APA now. ABA has slightly different rules.
Oh, dear.
Okay, second step, there's what I call the 5, 5, and 50 rule. You have to have affidavits from at least 5 breeders who have bred this, let's call it a variety, for sake of discussion, who've bred this variety for at least 5 years, and they're willing to certify that this variety produces not less than 50% reasonably true with regard to type, size, color, and comb. So it's just an affidavit that this really is a variety. It isn't something that just somebody decided to work with and doesn't really breed true. They want to make sure that this is a true breeding variety, at least 50%. And the 50% is to cover special situations where some varieties never breed true 100% of the time. For example, if you breed Andalusian Blue to Andalusian Blue, you only get 50% of offspring on the long-run average that are going to be Andalusian Blue. You're also going to get 25% black and 25% splash.
Oh, there's the Mendelian genetics comes straight through, doesn't it?
The genetics comes, it bears a factor in this whole process. So anyway, you've got these affidavits from 5 breeders who worked with this variety for at least 5 years, and they provide the affidavits. Step 3, you also have to provide certificates to the APA showing that at least 2 or more specimens have been exhibited in each of the previous 2 years at a show that was judged by a licensed APA judge. And that it has to be 2 cocks, 2 hens, 2 cockerels, and 2 pullets in each of the preceding 2 years at 2 different shows.
What class do they go in then if they're not already approved? Is there a special
Oh, you can. You can usually most shows will accept unrecognized breeds and varieties. It's just that the judge has no definite standard to go by, and these unrecognized breeds and varieties can do no better than best of variety. For example, say you've got well, let's take the Chanticleers. We have what's recognized in the Chanticleers is white and partridge, but a lot of people have buff. So if you're showing buff, technically, the buff can do no better than best of reserve of variety. They cannot go on to best of breed or reserve of breed.
Best of what was that again? Reserve of variety?
They can do best of variety and reserve of variety, which is, means your top two birds in the buffs, but they cannot then go on to compete against the white and the partridge for best of breed.
Okay.
And then, of course, from there, it goes on to best of class, which for Chanticleers is the American class. And then from there to best landfall or best of show and so forth. So it's just like dog shows or any type of other shows. You start within gender and age and then goes on to variety, then to breed, then to class, then
right.
to best.
Quick question, Mike. You said the Chanticleer is in the American class instead
yes.
of like the Canadian class?
Yeah, the American class is comprised of birds that were developed and bred up in North America. So
in North America, all
right. Right, right.
Okay.
Remember, Canada is still in America, North America.
That's right, that's right.
Okay.
Thanks.
So we've gone through three of the six steps.
Okay, and we've got just about 2.5 to 3 minutes.
Okay, I'll go over it real quick.
There's
also a monetary
too.
Deposit required with the application. With the APA, if your application is rejected, it is refundable. But if it's accepted, you don't get the money back. It used to be $50 for a new variety. Now it's $200 for a new breed, $400. If you're petitioning for some type of new species, it would be $500. Once that is all accomplished, you go on to step five. The APA then designates a place for a qualifying meet. At that meet, you have to have at least 50 birds shown in all these classes, cock hen, cockerel, and pullet, by at least 5 exhibitors. And then the final step is the judge who judges this qualifying meet sends his recommendation to the APA Committee on Standards. They decide whether or not to recommend acceptance, and if they do, then it goes to the board of directors of the APA who take a vote, and at that point, if you get an affirmative vote, your new variety is in. So that's a lot of information to give over a program like this, but it is, again, it is in the bylaws of the APA, which is available through the APA and also published in the APA yearbook.
Wonderful.
Questions?
Okay. Christine, do you have any questions?
No, I don't think I have. Those are really great points. I'm going to be facing something like that when I bring my Icelandics to this upcoming show in Paso Robles in 2 weeks. Because that's not a recognized breed, and it's really considered a land race, a sort of naturally occurring breed. So there's, it probably will never be recognized. There's just too much variability among the chickens. But I wanted to bring them and show them to people because they are so unusual.
Sure.
Yeah.
And other exhibitors and breeders enjoy seeing these rare types of breeds and varieties, too. It's just that they can't go on for the higher awards.
Right, right. And it's fun. And actually, the judges I've talked to always enjoy seeing unusual birds, too. Every bird they see helps them to keep their education going.
Right.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, Whisper, do you have any final questions or comments for the show today? I don't think he does. So anyway, we've been talking with Christine Heinrich and Mike Gilbert about showing chickens. Oh, hello, you there?
Yeah, I don't know why. I was just yapping away, and my mute button wasn't on or anything, so I don't know why I didn't pick it up. But no, I just wanted to say lots of great information. Lots of no, mine wasn't on. It was on. It was on loud and clear. I don't know why I wasn't picking it up. I wasn't sure. So maybe it just through Skype, since I hadn't chimed in, it just didn't recognize my mic plug in. So who knows? But no, it was great information. Me and Jen go to a lot of shows. We don't actually take our birds with us, but it's interesting to see all the different vehicles that are there, the different ways people transport from simple to the elaborate, and very good information regarding there. And it's always good to hear about how these different breeds are trying to be introduced into the APA, ABA. I know there's lots of other Saramas. The big Sarama groups around the country are trying to get those this year recognized by the APA and ABA. So that's going to be a great challenge for them, too. But, no, thank you very much for coming on and sharing all that information with us today.
You're welcome.
Great. Thanks so much, Mike. Thank you, Christine.
Thanks, Pat.
All righty, we're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, we've got chicken trivia contest and a little bit different swing on the trivia contest today. Today's contest is, of course, sponsored by, being every Tuesday, eggcartons.com. And if you're in the chat room, you saw what your prize is going to be. It is a really cool poster from eggcartons.com. It's actually the cover of their last year's catalog. And it's called Braveheart, and if you haven't remembered, if you weren't in the chat room and pulled it up, it's a $30 value. It's a really full-size poster. I think it's something like 18 by 24, and it's got a picture, for me to describe it to you. It's got a boar kind of going across a creek, and it's got a rooster about halfway across the board, and then his, all his little harem of hens, if you will, behind him, also following and crossing the creek. It's a very, very cool picture. In fact, if you go to eggcartons.com, you can see that. If you have their catalog from last year, it's their cover. And so that's a $30 value, $29.95, be shipped right to your front door, because today's trivia is sponsored by eggcartons.com. We'll come back and have that trivia. Well, you know what? Let's just go ahead and give the number out, and we'll have people start to call. 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. If you know today's secret password. If you know today's secret password, if you don't know, if you do know, don't be putting it in the chat room so everybody knows, because that's what you get for tuning in early and on time today. Remember that? So at the very beginning of the show, I issued a secret password, and if you know the secret password and are caller number 5, then you're going to win this awesome wall poster valued at $30. Very nice artwork from eggcartons.com. So caller number 5, if you know today's secret password, give me a call, 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. Today's contest sponsored by eggcartons.com.
Eggcartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at eggcartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Great radio show today, talking all about the tips, tricks, and traps of long-distance transportation of birds to poultry shows, and talked a little bit about the Chanticleer getting recognized by the APA and the ABA. And I know a lot of folks are doing that with the Saramas right now. So super, super show. You're not going to want to miss tomorrow, Wednesday. It's another great episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. He is the founder of First State Vet Supply. Tomorrow's subject, rodent control. Rodent control in your run and coop. That's what we'll be talking about tomorrow. And then Thursday show is still undetermined, but I think we've got something real special lined up. I just have to confirm. And then, of course, on Friday, another great fun Friday, we'll be giving away all kinds of great prizes from our sponsors on Friday. And, Pat, you know what? I guess nobody hung around that was here early enough to get the secret password. During the show introduction, I issued a secret password to try to encourage people to sign on early.
We'll have to go with a trivia question.
Well, I don't know. We have time. We've got 2 minutes left. So what we're going to do is we'll just save today's prize. I may do a Facebook fan contest a little bit later for it, which is always a joy. But, maybe you never know. We have all kinds of cool prizes. Maybe one day I'll have a secret password contest for a chicken coop, and it'll be the very first thing I do when the show comes on the air, and then people are going to be like, doggone it, I should have signed on time to listen to the show today. I would have won a chicken coop if I'd have got the password. So, you never know. Today was a $30 poster. Tomorrow might be a $400 chicken coop, but we occasionally issue passwords throughout the show. And if you can write those down and remember them, you can win some great prizes. So we'll just use this item as a Facebook fan contest sometime later this evening or this afternoon.
Well, now Whisper, you could give it to me because I deserve it. I mean, you got a tractor. Why couldn't I get a poster?
As soon as I get a receipt with that thing marked paid from
you didn't say Pat paid. Look, you just said you're going to send me the receipt.
No, not the receipt, the invoice, the bill. I love it. Oh, my goodness. All righty, folks. Well, thank you so much for tuning in today. Another great show. Back with the Chicken Whisperer. Follow us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. You can get all our great Chickens in the News articles there, of course. And we'll see you tomorrow right here, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio, when we welcome Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, to teach us all about rodent control and innovative ways to do that. All righty, Pat, take it away.
Okay, well, what a wonderful show. Hey, Mike Gilbert, thank you so much for coming on the air. Mike is a breeding expert, especially of the Chanticleers. He's been championing getting them in as a recognized varieties in the APA. And, of course, Christine Heinrichs, the historian for the Society of the Protection of Poultry Antiquities. And, of course, Christine is the author of a book, How to Raise Poultry. Andy Schneider, thank you so much for bringing us all together and for doing all that you do for the chicken movement. And, of course, what would we do without our chat room chickeneers and all our other listeners for clucking along? You just really make our show and make our lives so much fun. Thanks to blogtalkradio.com for providing the radio, chat, and video services. And, of course, as always, blessings to all, and may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody. Ha ha.